Today's episode of the Back to Back podcast is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks in any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, Tesla, for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimum. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with a free stock by going to backtoback.robinhood.com. That's backtoback.robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice, a recommendation, or a solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield, APY, on uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank.
Colby, not to twist your words or read too much into what you said, but being around young players energized you. That's not a statement about maybe you'd like to see some young players on your team?
Wow. That, you know what? That's a Bikram yoga stretch. You stretched the hell out of it. Good job. Good job. I'm not even going to answer that. That's just silly. Next.
Freddy boy.
I need a minute. I haven't set up anything on my computer.
Why are you on? Set up your computer.
Because James.
You could have been set up by now.
That's a James classic Ethan move.
What am I supposed
Clock's
to
ticking.
Do? I got a text from Smeltz a solid 30 seconds
ago. You could be set up right now. Why are you still talking?
Thought you were a professional, Fred.
Because more than a professional.
Kick him off.
Katz, Smeltz, and Strauss, your new law firm.
It's a law firm. It's a deli.
Okay.
Say anything you want. The move is to not answer on your phone, and then when you get on your computer, you just jump in.
Well, I just wanted to
kick him off.
Come for tax advice and leave with a pastrami sandwich.
Oh my god, this is a genius idea. I like this.
This is like when a food cart has everything, right? We have pizza, mm-hmm. We have falafel, we have tacos. Like, just pick.
What are you good at?
Specialize
it's
in
the right. Chain cafe.
It's a wellness center.
I don't want getting a pastrami sandwich from the same people that
do my teeth,
clean my teeth, and like fix my tax.
Yeah, there's something wrong. You're right. Got the grease stain on the taxes, stuff in your teeth. Why did I come here?
That accent.
That's my New York Jewish accent. Huh?
That was certainly an accent. I don't know.
Yeah, that was.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
Zach's birthday today.
Yeah, I know. Amazing.
The one that told you.
It's amazing. So, hey, let me ask you, Zach, just because it's your birthday. Were you like a big birthday guy like your whole life?
No, never.
Yeah. I never care
like,
about it.
So it's always like I don't want to plan and do anything, but if people like want to get together and celebrate, like I'm in. Like I'm not gonna be like, oh, I don't care about my birthday. Like I don't care about my birthday, but like people want to do something like hell yeah, I want to hang out with everyone. Like that's fine. Yeah. But yeah, it's never something like it's my birthday month. Like I'm not like Woz where it's like birthday week, you know, like
it's my birthday for 6 months.
Yeah.
Didn't you just plan a karaoke for tomorrow?
I didn't plan it.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, Jay, I'm going to be out the next 3 weeks. I'm like, why was it? It's my birthday.
we had like a 4-day window to try to figure out a live show in January, February, because the rest of the time, was like, I'm celebrating my birthday. I don't know what to tell you guys.
I said there was one weekend in particular that would have a birthday. I'm open to all the other weeks. I'm even open to my birthday weekend.
We just can't guarantee that you'd show up to the show.
Absolutely.
Oh, speaking of the show, March 28th, Bell House in Brooklyn, New York. Still got a couple of tickets left. You don't want to miss this show. The show guests are going to have a lot of power. You can come and join us, be part of our entourage. Turtle.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
What?
That's pretty good. That was pretty good.
That was really great.
Go to countthedings.com. There's an Eventbrite link there under the live show to get tickets. Still some tickets left. I don't think there are any VIP left, but there's still general admission tickets left. You don't want to miss this one. Like legitimately the one we've been building up to over the last couple of years is this show. You don't want to miss it.
This is it. This is it, baby. Well, the I don't grand know about finale. This
No, I don't know about that. This, I mean, sure, we can scare them into buying tickets, but I don't know the.
Okay, I'm in.
Fred's coming.
Cats in the bag.
You know, well, I call Kobe. He said, "What's up, Dwight? You know, how you doing? You know." So I was like, "Man, I'm just happy." And he would say, "Hey, man, yo, listen, yo, you know, LA is happy to have you. You know, you're part of the team now. You know, and you know, we're looking forward to, you know, getting this ring, man. You know, I'm happy for you, man. It's all over with, you know."
Welcome to the Back to Back Podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Lock it in.
There's like someone drilling next door to me right now. Can you hear it?
Congratulate them on the sex.
This is the Basketball Buzz.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Logic and Reason.
With Zach Harper.
Oh man, if you put Gordy in Atlanta, we can kiss Waz goodbye from Los Angeles.
Big Waz.
Kristen's beautiful words about pop are the best advertisement for the CIA that I've ever heard in my entire life.
I've seen the machine in the basement of Madison Square Garden churning out $100 bills.
Yeah, this isn't for weed. This is a, you know, lifetime achievement award. Right now, that he's getting.
I've been wanting to say that for a long time.
South will rise again. I'll tell you that much.
I'm just going to tell you what I think.
I don't think it's inconsistent.
I would apologize for all the physical and mental abuse the whole time you're here.
You've been popped, right?
Yes.
He may have big bones, but he doesn't have big meniscus.
What? Why would I wear pants or shorts or anything?
Everyone does well when you have good results.
Produced by Jade Hoy.
My mic on?
Everyone doesn't do well when they don't.
Yes. A lot of women have pictures in the dating apps with Jeff Goldblum.
It's enough of a thing that Jeff Goldblum has commented on.
Right. If they get caught, he gets thrown in jail.
The mecca of basketball.
Are you making calls for Fred Katz? Because
Katz has been killing it. I don't know if he's that good.
Well, this is a journey.
Everybody knows if you go back in time,
don't do anything,
the ramifications can be quite severe.
A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new day.
What's up, buddy?
All right. Welcome to the Basket Buds podcast of the back-to-back podcast of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper, joined by Fred Katz, joined by Dave DeFore, joined by Mo Dakhil, joined by Wasu Lambre. Gonna have Ethan Strauss at some point. We got Mike Smeltz doing stuff behind the scenes. We got Jade Hoy doing stuff behind the scenes. And it's been a couple of days since the tragedy. We are gonna talk some basketball in this one, but I wanted to, you know, kind of open the floor if anyone hasn't had a chance to talk about the passing of Kobe Bryant, the passing of his daughter, the passing of those other seven passengers who lost their lives in the crash on Sunday morning. Mo, I know you've game planned against him before, right? Like you've done the work at the NBA level. You've done the work at the international level when you were part of Team Australia's staff. Like what was it like game planning for Kobe? That's what I'll ask.
I mean, it was scary as hell, dude. Like game planning for Kobe is just like, you're like, okay, we're just going to, hopefully he misses lots of shots, you know, like hopefully he's not going to hit his normal number. Hopefully we can make it tough for him. You're then thinking, okay, if it's close, we have to have a whole different defense ready to go for him. He was just another level. And it was, you know, if it was a close game with 2 minutes left and he was in the game, you were scared and you knew that there was a potential of like, wow, this is usually where he tries to shine and he has the ability to do it. And you're very concerned at that point. And even with Team Australia, you know, I just went back and looked at the game, you know, we get eliminated by Team USA. It was a close game. It was a 6-point game with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. And Kobe, who hadn't played much throughout the Olympic run at that point, this is 2012. He comes in, hits a three, puts him up 9, then gets a turnover on a fast break. And I mean, like just him all alone, gets the ball, takes a corner three. That's a 6-0 run in like 40 seconds, you know, and we never get close again after that. And then he hits 4 more threes against us the rest of the game. I mean, that was just the kind of stuff like he rose to the occasion when the team needed it. You know, you knew he always could do that. And that was just such a hard thing to game plan for. You just were never prepared for it.
Yeah. It sounds like a nightmare. I mean, that's the one thing like I've kind of started to appreciate more over the years is getting to talk to players, getting to talk to coaches and stuff. And just like when, and obviously Kobe was, at a historic level with this stuff, but I, you know, it trickles down to other players of like Dave, I just have this appreciation. Like no matter what people think, like that guy's inefficient, whatever. Like when there is a guy that the entire defense is like, shit, we gotta slow this guy down tonight. Like that fear or respect or whatever you want to call it. Like that stuff I've come to like, I don't know, man, maybe we should talk about this guy a little differently because that's a problem.
Well, because we only think about efficiency in the terms of what it means right. in 2020. Like, we don't consider the fact that the majority of Kobe's career was post-illegal defense, pre-spacing. Right? You know how difficult it is to shoot under those conditions? And it's not like he grew up like the guys now where he grew up shooting threes and comfortable shooting threes. Like, it's a different game. And we say this all the time. But we forget that that weird period from like 2000 to 2010 or 11, where we had the old school style under new conditions. And so, you know, without that context, you would look at his numbers, which is, look, let's be honest, what most people do when they knock him as a player, they just look at the numbers and with zero context. And they're like, oh, he was just a chucker, which is garbage, completely throws out everything that, you know, that matters in the NBA. I mean, the most bankable skill is shot creation. That's the one you can make the most money with. And Kobe was the best at it the whole time he was in the league. That needs to matter.
Yeah, I think what Dave and Mo just illustrated, and, you know, just thinking about it since Sunday, and people have mentioned this, just the reverence that other players have. And I think that's why, right? Like the idea that the game plan can't work on him. The idea that a fantastic contest won't really matter. It's just a matter of if he makes it a miss or not. Just, you know, sort of the inevitability of Kobe, I think is what resonates with the players. Because I think players respect stuff that they themselves can't do. And, you know, to watch Kobe just master every skill offensively, right? Whether it be dribble, whether it be shooting, whether it be post move, footwork, core strength, whatever you want to call, whatever it took to be, you know, a great offensive player, Kobe basically mastered all of it. He could pass too, even though, let's face it, he didn't do a lot of it until he like really, really, really felt like it. Right. But he was good at it. He was a great passer. That's, you know, like that was kind of my one quibble with Kobe. It was just like, this guy, if he wanted to, could just basically be Stockton. If he felt like it.
Oh, he could have led the league in assists.
It just kind of wasn't wired that way, you know. But, like, every offensive skill he had a mastery of. And I think the players, all of the players, you know, if you took a player poll and asked him who's better than Kobe, I mean, if asked him if Kobe was better than LeBron, man, he would win that thing by a landslide. People like us, it was just like, I mean, come on, it's freaking LeBron. Like, this stuff kind of speaks for itself. But players do not feel like that. And players who played against both of them at various stages of their career, they're always talking about, no, it was Kobe, it was Kobe.
Well, that guy was a great defender as well. He was a great rebounder. I mean, he's one of the, you know, let's say 15 best players to ever play in the NBA. And you can't tell the story of the NBA without talking about Kobe Bryant for a good chunk.
The one thing I really liked about Kobe and the stories we're hearing more now, it's like, in 2000, he's still a young kid. He's at the All-Star game. He's asking Gary Payton, how can I be the best defender? You know, we've seen clips of him working with Hakeem Olajuwon. Like, he always wanted to just continue to develop the craft and continue to work on the game and add things to it nonstop. I mean, how many guards are going to a center going like, teach me the post, teach me your footwork and things like that? Like, you didn't see it then. You don't even see it that much now. And I think that's kind of part of what made him so special, was just that thirst for knowledge of how do I get better and how do I continue to improve.
Yeah, I was so I watched like four and a half hours of Kobe interviews yesterday morning and players talking about Kobe and you know, remember 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, whatever it was, Kobe was issuing his challenges on social media. He challenges Giannis to win MVP, right? And so the next year in 2018, Giannis worked out with Kobe during the summer. And so there's an interview in, I think, September with Jim Paschke and Giannis. And so Giannis is talking about the workouts and everything. and the excitement that Giannis is like describing all this stuff with and what he learned from Kobe and stuff, like that reverence was just like it just floored me. Like it was cool to see. Like it's cool to see the greatest players in the world, right, be in awe of somebody that does what they do, but just does it better. Right. Like that, like that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately is like with, you know, someone, you know, Russell Westbrook or whomever, right. Eric Bledsoe, like someone we've all, you know, kind of needled and crapped on stuff. And we're like, oh, that guy's terrible. And you think about like how hard they've worked and what they've sacrificed to get to where they are in the world, to where they're one of the 100, 200 best players, whatever. Right. And to think like that, we just dismiss, and I'm obviously including this, that we just dismissively go like, ah, that guy's not good. Oh, that guy's not good enough for it, whatever. And it's just like, to me, like it's such a stupid thing that I do, that we do. And thinking about like now thinking about people doubting like Kobe's legacy and what Kobe's meant. And all it is just a reaction to what his fans were loudly saying on the internet. Right. Like that, I feel like that's all it's been, is just like, oh, I don't like his fans, so I'm going to take him down because his fans are annoying. And it's just like, I've just been thinking about that a lot last couple of days of like, it's just kind of dumb. Like, it's kind of dumb the way we've talked about these historical players. And I get it. Like it can be fun. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, say don't do it or whatever. Like, it can be a fun conversation, but it's just put it in perspective. Like, man, that dude was a historical problem.
It's a good thing we don't dislike other people in other contexts of life just because their followers are annoying. It's a good thing that
doesn't. Yeah, no, it only applies to the NBA.
It just actually applies to Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's the only situation in which that like ruins society.
It's crazy that's all that happened. Yeah.
What like really got to me, like Zach, you talk about like Giannis just being so excited to be with Kobe. Something that there have been a number of things that I've just watched or listened to in the last 2 days. And I've just been like, it just really hits me. And even for some reason, I still don't expect it to hit me. And then it still does every single time. But one that really got me in the moment was when we were talking to Bradley Beal after the game in Atlanta on Sunday. And Brad said with this like feeling of like, what if that Kobe had that camp for a number of players last summer, and Brad said he had an invite, but he turned it down because his son, it conflicted with the birth of his son, and he obviously had to be there for his son. And he was just standing there saying like, but man, like he kind of said like, I figured I'd be able to get 2 minutes, 5 minutes of advice from him at some point, and it's just, I'm not going to be able to do that right now. And like what the amount that it would be worth just to get 2 minutes of advice from him would have just been, you know, priceless. And it was just such a depressing moment, almost like he had in that moment, like the realization of like, God, like what is happening that I'm not going to be able to get these 2 minutes of advice ever now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so I had drinks with Miles Brown last night. We were talking about a lot of this stuff of how like Kobe was supposed to be, I think other people have said this too, but like Kobe was supposed to be our Bill Russell, right? Kobe was supposed to be this generation's Bill Russell, of like impart, you know, giving the knowledge of the game, the tricks, having the leadership, having the, you know, being the mentor to all these younger players, both as a professional and as a basketball player and all that stuff. And now that knowledge is just, it's taken. And so like Ethan Strauss is with us now. Like Ethan, you've written a lot about, you know, building winners and building championships and the fall of them and everything. And like, it's crazy to think, and obviously there's a lot of loss here, so I'm not saying one is, I'm just talking about this subject, but like, it's crazy to think like that knowledge is just gone. Like that leadership is gone.
Yeah. I didn't really think about that. I didn't really think about his ability to be a mentor for other players. I thought of him more as a mentor for the culture writ large. And in a way, I think that, he almost hearkened back to an older time, even during his own time. And it seems as though, especially with the growth of social media, people are more connected. They're into seeming empathetic. They're into their vulnerabilities. There's a confessionalism about it. And you see it with players talking about mental health and whatnot. And that's all fine and well. And that's for the good. But I think that's not why people necessarily tune into athletes. They want athletes to be bigger than us, and they want them to be tougher than us, and they want them to show us how to lead, how to conquer, how to dominate. And Kobe completely embraced that role. He was almost like a self-help guru as a basketball player. And yeah, if there's too much of that, I can understand that could be an issue, but it seemed like the balance was shifting the other way and he was still steadfast. And I think he was in part beloved for it. At least that's what I saw. He was the basketball self-help guru in addition to being this mentor to other superstars of his generation.
I almost think it went even beyond basketball. Like yesterday, the tennis player, I was about to say Jokic, but
he plays for the Nuggets.
Novak.
Yeah. Novak, you know, after he wins his tennis match, you know, they always sign the camera, you know, and give it an autograph. And instead he just put, you know, KB248 GG, love you, and drew a heart. Like, I mean, Kobe ascended even basketball. It was across all sports. He had Neymar giving him tributes. Yeah. You had Cristiano Ronaldo tweeting. You had, I mean, like, just all over. So it's, even though he was ours, you know, in terms of basketball, and he was our guy, he took this to another level too, where he reached so many other people across so many different sports, the WNBA, the NFL, all those, everybody was responding to it, you know? So it's kind of crazy to see that reach now.
You know, I wrote about this yesterday of like, you know, Kobe and Allen Iverson are really the only two like legends right now who seem to openly appreciate what they're talking about, right? Or openly appreciate today's. I guess Reggie Miller to a certain extent, and Chris Webber sort of, when he's not talking about analytics.
Is it Reggie Miller just because he goes, whoa?
Yeah, like Reggie happens. Miller just seems in awe of anything that happens on a basketball court. But it's like, wow. But it's different. But everyone, yeah, but everyone else is childlike talking about wonder. Like, and hell, I do radio with some of these guys. Everyone is like, oh man, the NBA is not this anymore. No, it's not this anymore. And it's like Kobe. I mean, I watch this, like, oh, I can't remember what's the thing called, Detail. I watch him, like, he was breaking down summer league footage of Trae Young like a year ago, like some blogger, like he was, you know, like, oh, this is where he could pass here and all this. Like, Kobe was encouraging and celebrating today's game and telling people what was great about it and what you should look forward to and everything. And you know, Iverson talks reverently about today's players and everything. And it's just like, it's such a rare ambassadorship from former players that like, as I was writing that yesterday, I was just like, man, I wish more greats like celebrated this game and geeked out over it the way Kobe was openly doing. And maybe they do on some level. And they're just playing anything. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Right. Like you're better off if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. If you care about, you know, the health of the game, which clearly he did, right? Like,
yeah,
that's, I think this is the thing that we haven't even really seen yet, is Kobe's effect on the grassroots and the stuff that he was doing, like the Mamba Academy and all of that stuff. We haven't seen the fruits of that yet.
No, and man, I really want to know what's going to happen with the Mamba Academy. Yeah, I wonder what is with that? That's interesting that Kobe and Iverson, who were derided as selfish for at least part of their careers, are the most gracious in retirement. I don't know what that is.
Selfish, but not haters.
Well, right. Well, so I looked at it like, and granted, this is me completely speculating and trying to figure out, but like I wrote like that. I think there's an inherent insecurity that comes with being great, right? Because everyone's constantly challenging your legacy, questioning your legacy and everything. But it seemed like with Kobe, once he got to the end, that insecurity went away and he was just at peace. He was like, no, oh, I did what I did. I had he had one of the greatest careers of all time. He did what he did. And now he just wanted to appreciate things. And I don't think that goes away. I think that insecurity doesn't go away for a lot of guys.
It reminds me of, how Michael Jordan would say that he wasn't nervous because he practiced so hard. You know, why be nervous? Right. Why would I be nervous? I practiced. I practiced my ass off. At that point, you've tried your best. Whatever happens is up to God in that game. And I think Kobe might have had that sort of career where he worked so maniacally hard that even if he didn't catch Michael Jordan, even if he would have wanted more championships, it's not like he could have looked himself in the mirror and said, I could have done this or I could have done that. And I think with some of these other guys, it's just not the case. Some of these other guys, yeah, maybe they worked hard to get where they are, but maybe their gifts were such that they didn't completely need to. And maybe they look at the situation and go, ah, I could have done this or I could have done that. And they're haunted by what they could have achieved. I don't think Kobe would have had any reason to feel that way. He left it all out there. I think that's well documented. So maybe that's partially what allowed him to have such comfort with the game in retirement.
Maybe that's it. Like knowing he couldn't have worked harder, right?
He left everything on the court.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, he did.
Yeah. Literally, yeah. You know, he might be one of the few guys. I'm sure that, you know, he wanted to win more rings and all that stuff. But I think that if you look at the entirety of his career, if you put yourself in his shoes, it would be easy to say, yeah, I don't have any regrets.
I don't see why he should.
I mean, maybe a few, like the Shaq stuff, but like
Nothing on the court. And he got to do what he wanted, right? Like, he stayed with the Lakers. They even rewarded him with that contract that, you know, it was probably detrimental to the team, but, you know, for the relationship that he had to the team and the city, it made sense because people still turned out in droves to watch him. Even though the team wasn't very good, people still tuned in at home and the tickets still sold out very quickly because people were drawn to Kobe. It kind of didn't matter that the team
was. They outdrew the Clippers, who were good during that.
Of course.
Like, it wasn't even a contest. It was like, I mean, I was there. I was like, we're winning games, guys. Like, if anybody wants to come to our games, you know? And
his last game.
Yeah, look, basically.
His last game overshadowed the Warriors winning 73. Yeah,
I don't think there's a guy more popular in a major American city than Kobe was in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe
so
Obama in Chicago. I guess you could come up with some names.
Right.
You could come up with some names maybe, but
Waz's boy Jeter in New York.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I think Jeter New York.
Jeter's big in New York, but I don't know, man. It's like, obviously there are way more Yankee fans than Met fans, but the proportion is not the same as Clippers and Lakers.
And Jeter's just not as much a presence in the culture as Kobe was. Jeter is beloved because he was in the background. He was never screwing up. He was never embarrassing himself. But Kobe,
Mike Trout's not invoking Jeter in everything that he does. You know, like, it's just not the same.
You're right. You're totally right. And what's crazy is the difference of the cultures is that, like, and this just goes to show the lack of personality in baseball compared to basketball. Yeah. And I say this as a huge baseball fan. Trout's favorite player growing up was Jeter.
That's funny.
Up in Jersey, loving Derek Jeter. So, like, it's just crazy that you see it come across in so many basketball players and not as much in other sports.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking not just athletes, but just people. I mean, Kobe is a secular saint in Los Angeles. It's on a level beyond what you see in almost any other city. And it speaks also just to how unusual it is for a guy to play two decades with the same team and have that level of success. You almost have to have been in Los Angeles a while to really see what it is. But I mean, he's a religious figure. He really is. And you can see the evidence of that after his tragic passing. I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this.
I lived it, Ethan. Like, I was a Laker fan growing up. Like, I was in high school when the Lakers drafted Kobe. I would have been a Kobe stan if I wasn't working in basketball and now in media and all of that stuff. You know, it wasn't until I had to scout against the guy that it went away. But you know, and you're right, like, he was larger than life. Even then, even when he took Brandy to the prom, like, that's all we talked about. Like, this is gonna be so cool. This is going to be awesome. You know, so it's just, and that's why the city's so hurt right now. Like, you know, the guys who, Waz and Zach, who are in LA now, like, how many Kobe jerseys did you see yesterday? I mean, it was everywhere.
Oh, man, They were everywhere, yeah.
You know, and it's the same case today. And you can kind of feel almost a depressed sort of level of the city a bit because of it, because there is just a real sense of like, wow, like, you know, some people saying he's the king or whatever, but I really feel like it's like L.A. feels like it lost its son, you know, and we don't know what to do yet.
I just miss his interviews, man. He was so fascinating. I don't know him the way some of the other media members, especially in LA, know him, but just in a scrum, you would give him a question and he would always turn it into something interesting. He was so weird.
Right?
Yeah, like, he was just so weird.
It was like
tossing him a piece of paper and he was just going to do some crazy origami and just produce something that you couldn't have anticipated. I mean, the one I'll remember is when Andrew Bynum shot a three, and that was back when big men didn't do that. Right. They didn't shoot threes, and that was that disastrous Lakers season. Mike Brown was the coach at the time and he benched Bynum and there was just a few people in the media room. I think Mark Spears was there and we asked him about it and he just went into we asked Kobe about it and we just expected Kobe to kill Bynum, but he just went into this long speech about how sometimes to be great, to be truly great, and he could empathize with what Bynum was doing, you have to go outside what the coach thinks you can do. And it was so interesting.
Trendsetter, man. Trendsetter.
But it's just every time. I don't know what that gift was, but you just see him in any interview, and it's a compelling interview. And sometimes it could seem like self-parody, but it seemed like he was in on the self-parody. He did those Kobe system ads with Kanye, and you remember that, where he was mocking the idea of his public persona in the ad. He was just so adroit later in his career at how to present himself to the public, which I think only added to why the public resonated to him so much.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a great episode of The Lead today. The Kamenetsky brothers joined. By the way, sports fans, we have a daily sports podcast we want to tell you about from Wondery and The Athletic. It's called The Lead. Every weekday morning, The Lead brings you a deep dive into the biggest sports stories of the day from The Athletic's all-star team of local and national sports reporters. Stories like, where did the 49ers new star running back Raheem Mostert come from? What can Zion Williamson do for the Pelicans? The life and career of Kobe Bryant? Any of those. So if you're looking for the full story behind last night's scores and today's hot takes, make sure you subscribe to The Lead from Wondery and The Athletic. It's really one of the best listens I have every single morning.
From Wondery and The Athletic, I'm Anders Kelto.
And I'm Kavitha Davidson. And this is The Lead.
It felt like something great was happening.
I do want to get into basketball. And there is no easy transition, but one of the funniest losses of all time happened last night.
It was great. Mo and I couldn't even break it down on the ding.
All right, because of what happened Sunday, you know, we pushed power rankings. I still did the power rankings, but they're coming out tomorrow, I believe. And so I put a note in there like, everything is up through Sunday night, right? Like, you know, I'm not changing anything based on the results Monday or Tuesday. Like, it is just what it is, and it's, you know, a weird time lapse or whatever. And so in it, spoiler alert for the Wolves section, I was just like, wow, this team sucks. They're terrible right now. They haven't, you know, Karl Anthony Towns hasn't won a game since November 27th. Like, it's been 2 months, blah blah blah. And then I even wrote at the time of this, because it was at the time I wrote it, they hadn't played the Thunder yet during the weekend. I said I'm just gonna assume they lost to the Thunder. And then when I went back and saw the result of the game, I said, yep, they did. Like, I just, like, I'm assuming losses at this point, right? And so I'm ready to head out last night, and I look and I'm watching the game for a little bit, and they're up like 20 and they're just cruising in the third quarter. And I thought, oh, they've kind of made what I wrote look a little stupid here, but I trust that they'll blow this lead and they'll find a way to make my words come true. Like, and it was just, and then I didn't look at it until late last night, and I saw some comment about, wow, I can't believe the Kings won this game on Twitter. I was like, oh, right, I got to check the score. And I see that the Kings won in overtime. And then they were down, what, like 17 with like 3 minutes left?
17 with 2:49 left.
Unbelievable.
So I've got the stats that we had last night or this morning on the ding.
Yeah, hit me.
NBA teams were zero wins with 8,378 losses when trailing by 17 or more in the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter or overtime. This is the first time a team has blown a lead that big.
So absurd.
Yeah. So I hope this humor isn't too dark, but somebody said it was the ultimate Kobe tribute because they gave up a 24-point lead with 8 minutes to go.
Wow.
Impossible. Like, I have never seen anything like it. The Kings scored 33 points. No one has.
Read that stat again.
It's a regular season game between two awful teams, but, like, this is a historic single-game collapse. They gave 33 points in 6 minutes and 36 seconds.
Dude, they gave up the offensive rebound to the shooter.
But wait, to be fair, that was perfect.
No.
That was perfect execution. It was perfect execution,
but the way
there was no time to get in there for the rebound with anyone. Like, I actually think that there's nothing they can do there.
That thing went 100 miles an hour off the rim. And he was lane violating. Yeah. Which
now the 31 points before that we can talk about.
Hey, I gotta take. I kind of like when the refs help the collapse a little bit along. I'm kind of into it.
Absolutely,
like when they just nudge it. You know, like, oh, we're gonna call that three point foul shot. We're just gonna nudge this along right here. No, I'm into it. Here's a question. You know, Wolves fans want Saunders fired today. It would seem based on the internet, and they're really angry, and it's in the context of all this other losing, but you know, why is it worse to have it in your midst and lose it versus if they had just played a game where they lost by 10 and they were never really in it the whole time? Is that logical?
You control the clock, right? Like, the clock is your friend. I just can't understand, how do you not burn 2 minutes and 49 seconds with 17 points.
So you think it's like indicative of something worse that you can't.
Well, no. But here's my counter to that, Dave, is, and Grant, all right, this isn't a great comparison because now we're crossing sports,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But when you get to a big lead in football and then you change the way they play to try to, like, preserve, you know, run the clock or preserve the clock or whatever,
prevent,
right? You
go into offense? Prevent defense. I hate prevent offense.
Well, prevent offense, whatever.
Prevents you from winning, right?
But, right, exactly. But you change the way that you're playing, that you're changing the way that you got the lead. For the Wolves or any basketball team in that scenario, I kind of get continuing to do it. I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong about, like, running more clock, but I do kind of understand the idea of, like, we got this lead playing this way. Like, and now if the Kings counter and all of a sudden you're losing this lead and you need to adjust, I'm not saying you don't need to adjust or whatever, but there's part of me that's like, you kind of got to stick with what got you. Well, right.
Yeah, that's
a mistake.
They pulled Andrew Wiggins and he was cooking, right? Like, so there's a few things there, right? Like, they went away from what was working because they pulled Andrew Wiggins.
He was great.
And he was having a great game. But also, basketball, just a little bit different because you can do the same actions and still kill time. So, I mean, we see it all the time where they wait until 8 seconds to hit the high screen and roll, right? Like, because you want to essentially use up as much of that clock as you can. And I just honestly do not see how it was possible.
I mean, the Wolves would have been better off just taking 4 24-second shot clock violations. Like, it was not even getting a shot up or anything. Yeah. Just stand in the corner and dribble until the shot clock runs out.
Which tells you everything you need to know about the team.
Well, I mean, that team's not good.
No, yeah, they're awful.
Like, there's very little talent on that
Clearly.
Team. I mean, they're starting Shabazz Napier.
Listen, it was so bad when they were winning by 20. Kings fans who have had an awful season were apoplectic.
Yeah.
Mm.
The Kings, their fans are going nuts. Oh, we got to fire Walton, which maybe, you know, all of these things. And then they blew that lead to the other saddest team in the league.
I kind of feel like the Warriors should strike while the iron's hot, and you know, like, I don't know if they could possibly. They're saying we're not trading Towns, but maybe Rocco plus like 10 first round picks. Like, they just like see what they can get. You know,
well, Wiggins looked pretty good last night. Can I interest you in one of those?
I don't think there's much interest in that that kind of thing. Maybe see what you can get.
Read it tomorrow in the power rankings. That team sucks.
How many first round picks plus Rocco for Russell? I mean, how many first round picks until you go, whoa, that's a high?
This is a team that just blew this huge lead, and they're going to add, you know, another guy that can't really defend.
Hey, I mean, look, nobody can score. It's what they want.
Yeah.
It's what they want. I mean, look, I agree. Yeah. It's a little weird. It's a little weird that this is the answer to all their ills.
This is the problem with having friends,
by,
right?
By the way, I have to say, and I haven't written about this, but it's just an observation that, I mean, Russell's defense, maybe you could say that in a situation where the Warriors were competitive and it mattered if they won, that we would see a different side of him. But just staggeringly bad. Just staggeringly.
Yeah, it's
really bad.
Ethan, what's your overall impression of D'Angelo Russell? Because I came into the season like the guy played 2.5 months of good basketball in his whole life in the NBA, and people went crazy. And I'm just very skeptical of this guy's ability to like do things on a team that's actually good or matters. What's your take?
Ethan, before you answer real quick, like it's weird to go get a pick and roll point guard for a coach who hates the pick and roll, right?
Yeah, I mean, it might be. I think they've worked with it. And I think, I mean, offensively, he has some nights where he's really impressive. And he's young, so you would expect, you know, you would expect him to improve going forward. And you know, that talent is real. Now, at the rim, you might want him. I think the thing that ultimately prevents him from being a superstar is just not being that guy around the rim and around floater range. You know, if he had that, then maybe he's there.
That's
but defensively,
problem, though,
I know in like the average fan, right? Like the casual fan, and who can blame the casual fan? Because who's really breaking down defense on that granular level? But they probably think like Steph Curry, D'Angelo Russell, you know, relatively the same sort of defense that you're getting. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, there's a big gap. It's huge, and it's bad, man. It's really, really bad. And I think it's bad in part because I don't think it's just ability. And if you're going to invest this much of your franchise's future in a player, you just want to see more fight from them. And hey, again, young, and it doesn't matter if they win, so you could understand. I mean, I don't think Draymond necessarily is playing at his full capacity in this kind of situation.
This is why I hate the Warriors dynasty that cropped up, because 10 years ago, we just would have been giggling over this kind of player on the Warriors, right? Mm. Like, it's the left-handed Monte to some extent. and now, you like, look at the elitist Ethan Strauss. Writes a book about a dynasty. Like, just now he's thumbing his nose at D'Angelo Russ. 10 years ago, Ethan, you would have been all over this.
I don't think I would have been all over it. I think back when Monte was playing for the Warriors, I was saying that they should trade him. Because, look, there's a difference in cumulative effect versus you're checking it out for a night on League Pass, where I remember Michael Jordan would say, hey, you'd want to be me for a day, you'd want to be me for a week, you wouldn't want to be me for a year, right? Like, there's something about cumulative effect versus a one-time effect. And I think Monte was a guy where you watch the game, hey, he's going for 30 points, this is fun, you know, this is cool. But if you watched him night in and night out, just pounding the shit out of the ball into the floorboards and not passing, over time, you just got sick of it. I would say that for most people who are actually watching night after night after night after night. And I mean, it's just, I think that there's something to that. Now, I don't feel that way about Russell. I actually like watching Russell play offense. I don't feel the way I felt about Monte. But yeah, I don't think that. I'll put it this way. When the Warriors were bad, with the exception of Anthony Randolph, I think people for the most part understood when they were getting served something bad. And I would also say Anthony Randolph, pretty good career
no,
in Europe.
No.
Pretty good career in Europe.
Yeah, no, yeah, we're not to, playing against
we're
NBA
not allowed
players.
To talk about that.
Yeah, maybe the Warriors just were not as well run as some of these teams out in Europe.
Yeah, because they weren't playing Juventus or whatever the hell that name is.
He was ahead of his time. But D'Angelo
said Juventus. Get out of here, Zach.
So,
oh, you're going to talk to me about pronunciation of European things, Spaz?
Wow. Just the name drop of Juventus got me crying.
D'Angelo's best skill is his passing.
Jokic.
On offense, right? So, like, I mean, he has actually got amazing feel on the offensive end, but he can't get to the hoop. So, you know, he's not like the hardest guy in the world to guard. He can get hot and shoot, but as far like he doesn't help
Minnesota with the things that they struggle with, one of which is leadership, right?
But Dave, you know what he helps with? Getting that precious big three, the most hilarious big three in NBA history of Booker, Cat.
By the way, those three, they're like, those three are like a parody of what the common fan hates about the NBA.
Oh God, yeah.
But we got to get a sitcom on that. Like that's a,
oh my God. Oh, it's just a Lonely Island sketch about basketball. That's what it is.
just got to get that on. I want to see the behind the scenes by that.
I picture them like the scene in Zoolander at the gas station.
Yes, right. Exactly. Like, Dave, tell me you wouldn't want to watch
I think that they could outdo the existing Timberwolves team as far as like blowing leads. Like they could set records because, I mean,
oh my God,
by the way, I think, you know, of the three, like Booker and Karl-Anthony Towns clearly a little more consistent than D'Angelo, but I would trust D'Angelo more, like in a situation like they had last night where they were blowing a lead. Like I think D'Angelo could get you a bucket. He just somehow like can do stuff when it matters. But except for play defense.
Dude, I didn't know that Anthony Randolph had such a long career with Real Madrid.
Yeah, he's been great.
We're going to do an Anthony Randolph deep dive.
Because he's not playing against NBA players, guys. That's not to kill the talent in Europe.
Four seasons with Real Madrid, listen, man. I mean, he's like Zidane.
Zach, you sound exactly like all those Luka haters before he came over.
Luka's good.
Yeah.
We've seen Anthony Randolph in the NBA. He sucks.
Dude, you know the craziest thing about Anthony 20. Randolph in European Anthony Randolph, career 38% from behind the arc. That's pretty crazy.
You know who's the equivalent like of European Anthony Randolph?
On eight attempts a game.
God, Anthony Randolph is shooting.
Jan Vesely is an MVP now, my friend.
Right.
Let's stick Jan Vesely back in the league and see what happens there.
Go back to the Kobe conversation. This is another example, though, of a league that didn't know what to do with these types of guys back then.
Jan Vesely should have just played the five. Right. Someone would have happened.
The league was still trying to push, you know, the round pegs into square holes. And now, you know, obviously, like Europe, they were a little bit ahead on that, on stretching the floor with bigs and providing space. I think Vesely and Randolph both could come back and contribute.
The NBA made the mistake when Anthony Randolph was there the first time. The NBA made the mistake of letting him make decisions with the basketball. That's the mistake they made.
And honestly, there's something to that.
I'm shocked. I mean, he wasn't lying. 50%. Anthony Randolph has opened
the season. I'm not doing an Anthony Randolph podcast. I'll end this thing right now.
He's 44 of 88 from behind the arc.
This is a great time to talk about physical fitness and mental health. And thankfully, our friends at Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, I need to meditate right now with this conversation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body. If you wear it out with nonsensical Anthony Randolph talk, it's gonna lead to worse sleep. And Calm can help you train your brain to sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. LeBron James says getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things he does with his body and his mind. And by the way, for a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount. That's right, guys. A 40% discount by going to calm.com. That's calm.com/back. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com. That's calm.com/back. That's calm.com/back.
Hey, do you think there's like a European Grant Napier? I mean,
Oh, God.
Oh, if you don't like that, you don't like Real Madrid basketball. I don't know what accent that is. It's just standard European.
By the way, Eric Gordon went for 50 last night.
Hey, listen. Is James Harden a system player?
Yo, I mean, that's what I heard.
The Rockets played with so much spirit last night. I was like, what am I even watching right now? It was crazy.
Well, they were just great. Like, oh, my God, we get to touch the basketball. Oh, yes.
Seriously, though.
I think for like the first couple passes, they're like, wait, what? No, this is a mistake. I should not have the ball in my hands. What's going on here? Like, those guys just had – it was just shocking for them, man. That was amazing. And on the second night of a back-to-back, Tabo Sefolosha had a highlight.
Yeah, I started watching that game, but then when I saw that the Rockets had the two guys out, I mean, I wanted to look at it from what's going to happen in the West. You know, what are the matchups? Houston has had the upper hand in recent years just because Rudy Gobert doesn't want to go out and be spaced like that. And the way Harden is just so smart about attacking their defense. But I'm kind of excited about this Western Conference. I got to say it's a little I don't want to come off the idea that you've got the top tier of the LA teams that's still there. But I think there's some upset potential and there just seems to be, let's face it, a lot of parity out West. Nobody? Nothing?
No, I mean, you're right. You're right. I just didn't want to step on anybody's toes. But, you know, like, look at what the Jazz have been doing. Like, they're 20-5 now with the loss in their last 25 games since Joe Ingles went back in the starting lineup, right? Conley's been out of the starting lineup. I mean, you know, Zach, dude, obviously,
I love the Jazz. I love the Jazz now. I love the Jazz now. I love them.
But last night exposed one of their big warts is that if you can get Gobert out in space, he's prone to get cooked. Now, he's going to catch up sometimes when he gets beat. He had a couple last night, but I mean, I just think that, you know, that's a rough scene. And you know that teams are, they already know this is the game plan. We're going to attack them this way. So I think they need another little leap from Donovan Mitchell. They got to get a little bit more.
They might need a little more. It's tough. I mean, I know they beat the Mavericks, but man, when they're just getting shelled by Porzingis, and I mean, the Mavericks are interesting because they've got that they've got that ultra setup of the not just a spacing five, but a five who's really shooting and shooting from far away, where they might be a matchup issue for certain teams, and maybe they'll be able to upset one of those teams that has a better record. Because I could see the Jazz struggling with it, but I love the Jazz. I'm into this team. I like watching them. I think they're different. They've got shooters this time around. They're way better offensively. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're going to win the championship, but I wish we talked about them more. I wish we followed them more. I wrote an article about them. I was just blown away by their locker room. Their locker room, I know when teams are winning, it's a happy place, but it's a hilarious, just freewheeling, fun place, more so than any road locker room that I'd seen, at least. And they're almost like the extroverted Spurs. That's what I feel about the Jazz right now, where they're very professional, but they're very fun as well.
I think Quinn Snyder, I mean, that's, you know, one of the things that he's kind of been known for since he's been there. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, egalitarian offense and kind of a close-knit locker room.
Guys, I have breaking news from John Krasinski of The Athletic. Cat just had his shortest media availability of the season. Frustration level is very high.
Okay, but he just signed an extension.
Yes, but also
so figure it out.
I have other news from Chris Hine, who covers the Wolves for the Star Tribune. Towns did say the system works, even amid his clear frustration. So
what is the system?
Yeah, what's the system?
Well, the system is spread the floor, a lot of threes, a lot of shots at the basket, attack the basket. That's the system. They do have an actual system. They just don't have anybody who can hit shots outside of Towns.
Yeah, if you don't have guys that can actually, like, hit shots, because that's kind of a key thing, is the whole system, any system, none of them will work. It doesn't matter. You could have the best system in the world. If these guys can't put it in the hole, it's over. It's just simple.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they do, like, offensively and defensively, they do have actual systems in place. They just don't have the talent to execute it yet.
Well, the system is down. That's the problem. And, I mean, when you, again, I cannot stress this enough. When you pull Andrew Wiggins, who's actually having a great game, I mean, that's a coaching problem.
I won't go that far. I mean, they were up big. He thought the game was over. I mean, we've seen this before. Like, I'm not going to go so far to be like, that's a coaching problem.
I don't think they have. I actually think Ryan Saunders done a phenomenal job this year. Like, they were winning games when Kat and Wiggins were out. right? We like he's piecing together wins with like Covington and Josh Okogie and Shabazz Napier and Gorgui Dieng. Like they like I think he can be better.
So wait, what's with that? They had such a good stretch of basketball and Cat was out.
They just like the defense was like the like Gorgui played defense like and Cat played defense really well the first like 18 maybe 20 games of the season, and then as is what usually happens with the Wolves, they stopped playing defense after they proved that they could, and then Cat got hurt. Wiggins got hurt or sick, I can't remember. I think he got sick. And then, you know, they just, I think they kind of surprised some teams. I think some teams weren't really taking them seriously because why would you at that point? And yeah, they like snuck 3 or 4 wins in there.
I think D'Angelo Russell will fix it. I think that's the road to go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the one trading for him. Like you gotta call Gerson.
I mean, look, I try to be less certain because I just see crazy things happen. Young players, they surprise us. They're better than we thought. I would not be crazy optimistic about the future if that happened. That's just my take.
It just future of what happened?
The Wolves' future.
Oh yeah, I mean they've been the worst team since they came into the league. Like they have literally the lowest winning percentage. They've been relevant 3 times.
Yeah, they could trade for Steph Curry. And it was
they would. That's the thing. They would have screwed up Steph Curry. He wouldn't be the guy he is now.
It's just
actually that's not true. He would be injured.
He would be worse. He would be worse than Johnny Flynn had they drafted him.
Yes,
but it's just kind of amazing how the Wolves for a while were that like this is the team, like they're the next team to take over. They're gonna be wait till these guys get older, and then now we're just looking at them going like
they had young talent. Oh, they had
young talent, man. That that'd get you every time.
Hey, were we too hard on Thibodeau? I mean, maybe the perspective on Thibodeau should shift and say,
you think
hey,
firing him was gonna fix all your problems?
Well, or just hey, you know, he did get to the playoffs within the Wolves organization. I mean, maybe he's got a very old school basketball mentality and he's not with the modern times. They needed to part ways, but you know, maybe in retrospect, because I remember looking at least at Wolves Twitter and Thibodeau was the problem every day, all day. Well, no more Thibodeau, and
there's been a constant this entire time, right?
Yeah.
It's bad ownership. Yeah. Bad ownership before Glenn Taylor, they had bad ownership with Glenn Taylor. Now I do fully believe if Gerson Rosas is empowered and allowed to do what he wants to do, and they just say like, yep, you say we got to pay this guy, we'll pay this guy. I do think he can fix it, but it's going to take like years to clean up that mess.
Oh, I actually tried to do the math this morning.
Gerson Rosas, very chantable name, you know? Like Gerson Rosas.
Absolutely.
For those people that identify more with the front office than the players.
I love the front office, just like Woz.
Yeah. Listen, I root for those cash sheets, guys.
Honestly, I see a lot of myself.
I try to do the math on this.
Like, honestly, I just do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of
Botox in my future. Like, it's happening, Zach. I didn't move out here for nothing.
I tried to do the math on a rebuild for the. I tried to do the math on a rebuild for the Timberwolves, which just seems crazy because
your calculator said fuck off.
Pretty much, like they have one of the best players in the league that's under the age of 25.
Yeah,
that's really what they have, right? Like they have Karl Anthony Towns. That's it, and you tank for years to hope to get a Karl Anthony Towns and then build around him. But they are so screwed because of that Andrew Wiggins contract. And not to just make it all about the contract, but the thing is, like, because you have the salary cap, you pay that much money to a player that doesn't produce in the way that he needs to. And you just, it's so hard to build up a winner. And this just goes back to Jimmy Butler and everything he said. And he was right.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Dead on.
That was the thing I was like, When Wolves fans were mad at Jimmy Butler, like that was the thing I kept saying. I was like, look, whether you think he's right or not, there are a lot of people around the league that agree with him. So like whether it's accurate or not, like it's on the Wolves, it's on those players to prove that this is wrong. And they haven't done it other than like a month here and there, which also doesn't prove that it's wrong. It actually proves it right of like, no, Jimmy's right. They're capable of doing this. They just choose not to do it.
Yeah.
That's it.
But yeah, it'd be like 2025 essentially before they could God. Have a hope for making the playoffs.
I mean,
have you know, because it's like 4 or 5 years to do a full strip down.
Have they fixed the media meal? Because that's a bottom five media meal.
Oh, it's a bad media meal, man. The only time I ever enjoyed it was if you got a Sunday matinee game. They had a pretty decent breakfast brunch spread.
Oh, jeez. I was in there, and Glenn Taylor was in there eating it. So I'll say at least he's, you know, at least he's.
I mean, that's a man who will pinch a penny here and there. Like he's willing to, I'll give him this. He's willing to spend when it looks like they could be good. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened since like 2002. But yeah. They used to be in the luxury tax threshold, right? Like they used to spend, they just spent it on like Troy Hudson.
Yeah. But not on media meals.
Not on media meals, look, man, because that's how you stay competitive.
It's no Miami. Miami is like, Miami looks like, no matter what the meal is, it looks like sleepaway camp sloppy joes. Like it could be like turkey sandwiches and it's like, what are these sloppy joes?
It's really, for those who don't know, the media meal, it's like you're a high school cafeteria in some arenas. And really, you know, you almost can't blame them because I can't find a correlation between the quality of the media meal and the quality of the team.
No, because the Kings used to have one of the best.
Well, the Wizards, Fred, I thought the Wizards did a really good job.
Mid-tier.
The Wizards are good. They're better for if you don't have it every day because it's pretty solid quality food.
The cumulative
effect. Same four meats that are rotated between the same two or three sauces every single time. And so you get there and you're like, I've had this same meal 41 games in a row and I just need something else.
Houston is where it's at. I haven't had the Detroit one. I've heard good things. I haven't had it. Portland, they give you the charcuterie and the beer after the game. I mean, that's incredible. Staples can certainly have its moments. The worst ones in my experience, certainly the Wolves are up there, if not the worst. Charlotte, really bad. Charlotte, I mean, my God, Michael Jordan. Dude, Charlotte. You get your water out of a dirty sink, at least in my memory.
You do.
Yeah,
New Orleans, Fred, yeah, I'm New Orleans not, I'm too.
Not, yeah, you just get it out of a dirty sink. What is that? This is just an open air sink. You get your cup of water, you trudge over there, and you sink your water into existence. And then when you want tea, you pour it out of a reappropriated milk jug in Charlotte.
The sink in Charlotte, it looks like a dentist's office.
None of what you said sounds legal.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's going to give people coronavirus without any infection coming from mainland China.
Wow.
And you know, actually, I was going to make a comment that then Jade was going to have to get approval for this this podcast. So we'll just wrap there. That's going to do it for Wazzy Lambert, for Dave DeFour, for Fred Katz, for Ethan Strauss. I'm missing there, Mike Smeltz. I got you. Hold on. Jade Hoy. I'm Zach Harper. Thanks for subscribing to the pod. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the podcast. Or if you're subscribed to The Athletic, thank you and spread that love around and make sure other people subscribe.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Fun.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Trying new things now. You're doing always new stuff. I don't think that you're retired in my brain because you're so young, and I think you're still the best basketball player out there right now. But I mean, I think you can. Can we work together with the help of your fans? Can we work on a deal and get you back for like 10 games a year? Just do the playoff. Yeah. Just come in, do the playoffs, leave, and then win a championship. Dude, just know.
Nah, I stopped at 60, dude. That's it.
That's it, right? That's it, do you ever watch the games back and go, I could probably do that one?
No, you know, I
watch through the lens of my daughter, man. She loves playing basketball. So, and when we watch basketball, we'll watch it together and that sort of thing. With both of our daughters, Natalia and Gianna.
Yet again. Fox to inbound, goes quickly to Shaq. Shaq left side to Ori, looking for Kobe to get some space against George Lynch. 2 seconds, 1 second, Kobe pump fake, Kobe for the win! Kobe
the dagger!
The dagger!
In Kobe's hands, 8 to go. Bryant's had an unbelievable quarter. He spins, he shoots, Lakers lead!
Point line. taking a little bit of time. One dribble pull up for the win. He's got it! The Lakers win! Kobe Bryant.
Bryant dribbling. Has to put it up at the buzzer.
Banks it in! Oh, he banks in the three! And the Lakers win the game!
Walton can tip it. Bryant with the save.
Oh, you got to get a shot here.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!